The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Women's Health Watch and probably from the Harvard Health Letter as well. The first article is from the Harvard Women's Health Watch of April 2023, and it's entitled Pre-Diabetes, a Window of Opportunity. Spot clues your blood sugar may be climbing and take steps to prevent full-blown diabetes. Diabetes gets a lot of attention these days, and for good reason. It can lead to serious health complications like heart attack, kidney failure, amputation, blindness, and early death. But its precursor, aptly named pre-diabetes, doesn't get nearly as much airtime, despite affecting three times as many people. One in three American adults, an estimated 96 million people, has pre-diabetes, which is characterized by blood sugar levels that are higher than the normal range, but don't quite reach diabetes status. The vast majority of people don't know when they have it, and this is where the danger and opportunity lie. As with every chronic prevalent disease, it's incredibly important to understand who's at particularly high risk of progressing from pre-diabetes to diabetes, says Dr. Guillo Romeo, Associate Medical Director of the Adult Diabetes Section at Harvard-affiliated Joslin Diabetes Center. Unlike diabetes, pre-diabetes is largely silent and typically doesn't produce blatant symptoms that might clue us into its presence, Dr. Romeo says. But subtler signs often show up that shouldn't be ignored, offering a valuable window to curb blood sugar levels and halt progression. Anyone whose blood sugar falls into the pre-diabetes range is going in only one direction, unless changes are made, says Emma Samuels-Grinblatis, a registered dietitian and practice manager in the Comprehensive Weight Management Center at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Genetic and lifestyle factors both play a role in the development of diabetes. Whether we like it or not, our bodies will behave in certain ways. We don't get to play with our genes, but we do get to make changes in our eating behaviors and lifestyle choices. The same factors that play into diabetes development, overweight or obesity, inactivity, and family history, increase the risk of prediabetes. Paying attention to these, along with any persistent fatigue, should alert you that you may be in jeopardy, Dr. Romeo says. Also, notice if you're getting more infections, especially vaginal yeast infections. This can happen in women with prediabetes whose blood sugar spikes after meals, perhaps several times a day, but whose fasting glucose levels stay in the normal range. Their response to meals cannot be categorized as normal, Dr. Romeo says. After eating larger meals, some people with prediabetes also experience repeated urination or blurry vision. These signs, too, are related to temporarily surging blood sugar levels. They also happen to mirror full-blown diabetes symptoms, but on a smaller scale. While we like to classify things in buckets, the truth is that prediabetes and type 2 diabetes are often on a continuum. It's the same process across different stages. Sometimes people are on the brink, so they notice certain signs even if they don't, by the book, have type 2 diabetes. Lifestyle changes are the cornerstone of measures to prevent prediabetes from progressing. A new study published online September 21, 2022, by the British Medical Journal underscores this concept, suggesting that women who have had a temporary form of diabetes during pregnancy can lower their risk of later developing the disease by 90% by adhering to five key lifestyle factors: healthy weight, high-quality diet, regular physical activity, moderate alcohol consumption, and no smoking. The researchers based their conclusions on an analysis of 28 years of health and lifestyle data on 4,275 women who had pregnancy-related diabetes. Of these, 924 later developed diabetes. Frequent movement in particular is pivotal in staving off the problem. A new study published online December 2, 2022, by the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism suggests that women who take more steps each day may have a lower risk of developing diabetes. Researchers analyzed diabetes rates along with data from wearable fitness devices from 5,677 people, 75% women. Participants whose daily step counts averaged 10,700 at the study's start were 44% less likely to develop diabetes over the following 4 years, compared with those who averaged only 6,000 steps per day. Regular exercise plays a profound role in blood sugar, Grimbladis says. The recommendation of 30 minutes of exercise 5 days a week can be broken down into 10-minute increments and include things like walking, yard work, and dancing. Any form of exercise is good for our bodies and brains. Exercise pays off well beyond a shrinking waistline for people at risk of diabetes. Exercise alone often won't result in weight loss, but it has significant benefits that can't be measured by the scale, not just in terms of preventing progression to diabetes, but on your heart, your mood, and many aspects of overall health not captured by a change in your weight. Along with lifestyle changes, the drug metformin can boost diabetes prevention efforts for some people with obesity. Metformin lowers blood sugar levels by improving the way the body shuttles sugar from the blood into the cells of the muscles and other tissues, where it's used as fuel. Research shows metformin reduces the odds prediabetes will progress to diabetes by about one-third, Dr. Romeo says. Though lifestyle intervention works better, lowering the chance of progression by 60%. For some, maybe the focus is not about losing weight, but how you should exercise at whatever level you can, looking at this not as a sprint, but as something you can incorporate into your routine over the years. There's a small attached article that's called Three Types of Blood Sugar Tests. Screening for prediabetes and diabetes relies on tests that measure levels of glucose in the blood. Get tested every 2 to 3 years if your prior results are normal and there are no changes in your risk factors, says Dr. Julio Romero, Associate Medical Director of the Adult Diabetes Section at Joslin Diabetes Center. A trio of tests can reveal blood sugar levels. Ask your doctor which one or combination makes sense for you. The first is fasting blood glucose. You stop eating 8 or more hours before the test, which shows how well your body is able to process blood sugar overnight. A fasting blood sugar level of 99 milligrams per deciliter or lower is considered normal. 100 to 125 indicates prediabetes, and 126 or higher indicates diabetes. A1C. This reflects your average blood sugar level over the past 2 or 3 months. An A1C measurement below 5.7 is normal. 5.7 to 6.4 is prediabetes. 6.5 or higher indicates diabetes. glucose tolerance test. This test, done after an overnight fast, involves taking several blood samples before and after you drink a sugary liquid. For a blood sugar measurement taken 2 hours after drinking the liquid, a level of 140 or lower is considered normal. 141 to 199 indicates prediabetes, and 200 or higher indicates diabetes. A variation of this test is used to diagnose diabetes during pregnancy. And finally, we're going to finish up the Harvard Women's Health Watch with some short articles called Research We're Watching. The first is, vitamin D deficiency is linked to loss of muscle strength. Having a low level of vitamin D greatly increases a person's risk of age-related loss of muscle strength. That's called dynapenia, a major risk factor for falls. The study, published online September 2022 by the journal Calcified Tissue International and Musculoskeletal Research, analyzed data from more than 3,200 people aged 50 and older with no previous dynapenia. Researchers tracked them for 4 years as part of the English Longitudinal Study of Aging. Participants' vitamin D levels were measured with blood tests and categorized as sufficient, defined as more than 50, insufficient, 30 to 49 nanomoles per liter, or deficient, less than 30 nanomoles per liter. After 4 years, grip strength was evaluated as a measure of participants' overall muscle strength. People deficient in vitamin D were 70% more likely to develop dynapenia by the end of the study than those with normal vitamin D levels. The results make sense. Researcher says that because vitamin D is known to help with muscle repair and contraction, people can avoid vitamin D deficiency through sun exposure, eating foods rich in the vitamin, or taking a supplement. And then here's another brief article called DASH Diet Even Better for Women's Hearts. Following the DASH diet, long proven to lower blood pressure, may also significantly lower the risk of heart problems, especially in women and black adults, a new study suggests. The Harvard-led study, published in January 2023 in the American Journal of Cardiology, analyzed data from 459 adults who participated in the original DASH, which stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension, trial between 1994 and 1996, when they were 22 through 75. Participants were randomly assigned to one of three eating plans for 8 weeks, a typical Western diet high in total fat, saturated fat, and cholesterol, a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, and the DASH diet, which emphasizes whole grains, lean protein, nuts, and low-fat dairy, in addition to fruits and vegetables. Both the fruit and vegetable and DASH diet reduced participants' risk scores for heart problems by 10% over 8 weeks. But those benefits doubled among women and quadrupled among black people who ate the DASH diet. Since high blood pressure is more strongly associated with heart failure and death in women, researchers said, the findings should help to shape our lifestyle choices. Now let's go on to the Harvard Health Letter. This is the Harvard Health Letter for May 2023. And the first article is certainly relevant. It's entitled, Tools That Help When It's Hard to See. Assistive devices can empower you and promote independence. Your grandfather's best defense against daily vision struggles might have been a magnifying glass or a pair of eyeglasses. The tools at your disposal are vastly different. With sophisticated computers and artificial intelligence, making up for vision impairment in ways Gramps could only imagine. Advances in technology have revolutionized what people with vision impairment can do, especially in the last 20 years, says Alex Bowers, an associate scientist at the Shepens Eye Research Institute at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts Eye and Ear. She is investigating new ways to help people make the most of their remaining vision. Most smartphones, tablets, laptops, and desktop computers have built-in tools that can help people with vision impairment. These accessibility features can enlarge the text on cursor size, adjust a screen's contrast, zoom in for close-up of anything on screen, turn speech into text, and read information like documents, texts, emails, or calendars out loud. Most devices, including smart speakers, also have built-in digital assistants that understand voice commands and can complete tasks for you. For example, you can tell a digital assistant to make a phone call, look up information online, place a grocery order, give you directions, send an email or text message, type out information in a document, play music, read you a book, or operate other smart home devices like lights, thermostats, appliances, or home security systems. There are perhaps 100 or more apps that are designed specifically to help people with vision impairments, Bowers said. They can perform a wide variety of tasks. Some apps can say out loud what your smartphone camera is seeing. The Seeing AI, that's S-E-E-I-N-G, capital A, capital I, app, can identify products, people, or currency, describe the scene in front of you, or read text and handwriting. If you don't have a smartphone, OrCam My Eye does the same thing. That's capital O, small r, capital C, small a, small m, My Eye, capital M, small y, capital E, small y, small e, does the same thing using a small camera that clips onto your eyeglasses. Other apps like Be My Eyes or AIRA, A-I-R-A, connect you to a living person who can tell you in real time what you're seeing. You can use it in all sorts of situations. Maybe you're in a train station and can't figure out which way to go, or you need assistance shopping in a grocery store, Bowers says. Smartphones come with built-in magnifier apps. You can also download special magnifier apps like Super Vision Plus. The S and the V are capitalized. Developed by Massachusetts Eye and Ear Associate Scientist Gang Luau, that magnify and stabilize images. That's important if your hand is shaking, but you need to read medication directions or the fine print on a bill, Bowers says. There are apps to help you reach a destination, not only by saying step-by-step directions out loud like Google Maps does, but also by describing the terrain around you, helping you find bus stops, the way Massachusetts Eye and Ear All Aboard app does, alerting you to a bus arriving at a bus stop the way Blind Square does, or giving you directions inside a building the way NavCog does. That's capital N-A-V, capital C-O-G. Note, apps for impaired vision may or may not be free, so make sure you investigate before installing them. Some services are available by subscription only. An example is AIRA, A-I-R-A, connection to a live person who tells you what you're seeing. You need to buy a certain amount of monthly minutes to use it. starting at $26 per month. Some tools that help you cope with vision impairment are wearable, mounted to a headset, in spectacles, or in a device that fits onto your eyeglasses. Some contain software that makes it possible to see far away or up close, and may be helpful for people with macular degeneration, glaucoma, and other eye conditions. For example, spectacle-mounted telescopes. These magnify objects in the distance, and you can use them for driving, or looking at a computer screen, a TV, or people's faces. Some have autofocus features. Video display systems. This type of low vision device is a futuristic looking headset. It has a high definition video camera that captures what it sees and projects the images onto screens inside the headset. The images can be enhanced to improve contrast, magnify, or expand your field of vision. Some gadgets also enable you to stream TV shows or view computer screens. Costs for these high-tech devices are in the thousands of dollars, similar to getting a pair of hearing aids. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs covers some devices for some veterans, but Medicare does not. You need to check to see if your private insurance covers a particular device. People who suffered a stroke or traumatic brain injury sometimes lose half the field of vision. That's called hemianopsia. The Pelly lens, developed by Bowers and Massachusetts Eye and Ear senior scientist Eli Pelly, can help. The Pelly lens uses high-powered prisms to shift light from one side of your eye to the other, giving you back 30% of your lost vision. Now we're setting up a clinical trial to evaluate a different type of prism that's even higher powered and has the potential to provide up to 45% of lost vision. Lots of other tools can help make life easier for people with impaired vision. There are household gadgets like talking thermometers, scales, and calculators that audibly read out results, large print books, filters that reduce screen glare, and even good old-fashioned magnifying glasses are also helpful. But the more technology advances, the more it'll show up in low-vision devices. Computing power continues to increase every year. Scientists are constantly trying to find ways to improve assisting devices. And now let's turn to news briefs in the Harvard Health Letter of May 2023. And the first is, can a healthy lifestyle ward off memory decline? An increasing amount of evidence suggests that a healthy lifestyle is linked to better thinking skills later in life. But few studies have looked at healthy lifestyle effects on memory in particular, and none have considered the effects on memory in people with a genetic risk for Alzheimer's disease. Now a study from China offers insight. The study, published online by the British Medical Journal, involved more than 29,000 people without dementia. They were, on average, 72 years old. Participants initially underwent cognitive testing, as well as genetic testing for genes known to raise the risk of Alzheimer's, and reported how well they stuck to six healthy lifestyle habits: eating a healthy diet, exercising, not smoking, not drinking alcohol, being socially active, and engaging in brain-challenging activities. Participants were followed for 10 years, periodically reporting their lifestyle habits and undergoing cognitive testing. At the end of the study, people who stuck to at least four healthy habits showed significantly slower memory decline than people who didn't practice any healthy habits. This was true even among people with Alzheimer's-related genes. The habits associated with the biggest effects were diet, cognitive activity, exercise, and social contact. The study was observational and doesn't prove conclusively that a healthy lifestyle protected memory, but a healthy lifestyle has many health benefits, and you'll only win by improving yours. Also in News Brief, they report that gardening may bring a harvest of health benefits. Want to increase your fiber intake, reduce stress, and get a little more physical activity? A randomized study published in the January 2023 issue of The Lancet Planetary Health found all of these benefits when participants grew their own produce. The trial involved 300 people, average age 41, who wore activity monitors and took occasional surveys about their diet and health. None of them had kept a garden for at least 2 years. Half the participants were given an introductory garden course, seeds, and a community garden plot to work in for 1 year. The other participants were told not to do any gardening. Compared with non-gardeners, gardeners ate about 2 more grams of fiber every day, which was a 7% increase in fiber intake, reported greater reduction in stress and anxiety, and did about 6 more minutes of moderate to vigorous exercise per day. That's about 40 minutes per week. All of those changes are linked to better health, like lower risk of cancer and other chronic diseases. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Yunkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.